Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Road warrior Paula Poundstone is returning to our region, a familiar stomping ground for the comedian who's been a stand-up stalwart for almost four decades. A regular voice on these airwaves, on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Poundstone is performing at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie on June 24th. She also has a new double album coming out this month, North by Northwest, Paula Poundstone Live. Paula Poundstone, welcome back to the Roundtable.
Thanks so much.
Sounds like you've been busy.
So busy I can barely see straight, actually. But it's good. Better busy than, calling that love line number late at night. That's good. Let me just go on record saying I've never done, but I know it's there. Yeah, I do, however. I do have, an OCD-type obsession, I suppose one might call it, with Boardwalk Empire. Do you know that show?
Sure, I love that show.
I bought it years ago. I generally speaking, I don't really watch. I watch news on TV, but I stopped watching primetime television when Radar left MASH. So it's really been quite a while since I've involved myself in television in that way. But I was in a hotel one night. I was sort of flipping around, hoping to find an old movie or an old sitcom on the many-channeled thing that's in a hotel. And I stumbled on this show, Boardwalk Empire. This is a few years ago. And it's very captivating. I'm not exactly sure why, because there's not a character in it that has a redeeming characteristic, but it's very captivating. It's very well done. Steve Buscemi, you just can't take your eyes off him. So I say to myself, knowing that I just can't stop once I start, I say to myself, well, okay, I'll buy it on DVD, but I'll only watch when I'm working out. And that worked just fine. I did exactly that. I took it on my stupid little DVD player down to the hotel fitness room when I'd be in a hotel, and I'd do a little walking machine while watching Boardwalk Empire. But then I started to slide. Then I kept lowering the bar. Then it was, okay, only when I'm eating Butterfingers. And then it was only when I'm driving. And, I shared this at one point kind of sheepishly with a dance teacher that I had. Because in order to tell whether you're really learning to dance, they talk to you, right? Because in the beginning, you're doing triple step, triple step, back step, triple step, back step. So if it's really sinking into your muscle memory, then you can have a conversation while you talk. And for this reason, the dance teacher would just sort of ask me questions about my life or whatever, not really because he was interested. But so he said to me one day, something about what I'd been up to or something, and I'm doing triple step. I was learning swing dance, triple step, back step. And I said, well, very sheepishly, I said, I think I have like an addiction to Boardwalk Empire. It was really the first time I'd ever shared it with anybody. I couldn't stop watching that damn thing over and over again. Every disc is like almost worn thin. And I said, I can't stop watching Boardwalk Empire. And he goes, oh, have you seen Homeland? And that's like if I had said to him, I haven't wanted to tell anybody, but, I've been doing heroin. If his response was, oh, have you tried cocaine? It's the same answer. Those shows are very bad for us, those serialized shows.
What do you do when you finish Boardwalk? I mean,
I start it again.
So you go back to the beginning.
I go back to the beginning, but okay, here's the really sad part. I will leave the same disc in the player for, months, and I play it every night. I play it, not every night, that's not true, but I play it almost every night while I'm packing and unpacking, which I do a lot of, by the way, so that's almost every night. I play it while I'm, while I'm trying to sleep. Because I know every health professional would say that's a horrible idea, but the thing is, I don't have to stay awake because I already know what's happening. I already know every word they're going to say. I already know when they're going to take a breath, even. I mean, I'm beyond knowing, like, whodunit kind of thing.
It's your bedtime story.
It is. That's exactly what it's like. I did at the Chicago airport just a couple weeks ago. I bumped into the guy who played... I think of his character's name right now, but he played the deputy sheriff that stepped in when Eli was after Eli was out of commission for a while.
Right.
Yeah. Do you remember that guy?
Sure.
Well, he's lost some weight, just so you know.
That's good.
Yeah, he looks good. I bumped into him at the Chicago airport, and I was so excited I took a picture with him. And I'm sure he's been sharing that picture with everyone he knows.
Do you know any of those guys? I mean, do you know Steve Buscemi? Do you know Shea Whigham?
No, and actually, you know what? They had Steve Buscemi on Wait. Now, I don't think I had told the people at Wait Wait that I have this little problem where I can't stop watching Boardwalk Empire because I was embarrassed. It's a terrible thing. But they had Steve Buscemi on Wait Wait one time. He was a Not My Job guest. And I was so upset when I heard they had him without me. They also had Clinton one time without me, and I was really upset. And I had to find out from a cab driver on the street. I got in a cab one day, and cab drivers often listen to the radio, and therefore a lot of cab drivers will recognize my voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, I said something to the cab driver, and he said, oh, aren't you on that show? Well, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And I said, yes, I am. And he said, oh, they had, it wasn't the weekend when I was on it. And he goes, oh, they had Bill Clinton on this weekend. And I was so upset. So I went to Peter Peter Sagal, my boss, the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and I said, how could you have Clinton without me? And he said, Paula, if we had both you and Clinton on the same show, we would still be on the air. Because we both are a little on the for both sides.
I was going to ask you about this. I was getting ready to talk to you and wondering if there were standings for the show. You've been on it for over 15 years, and I was curious about how many times you've won. And I Googled it, and there is a website that some beloved nerd made with all of the stats.
Yeah,
have you seen it?
His name is Lin Pham, and I forget where he lives, but he occasionally shows up to shows. I think he even flew out for for Carl's last
wow.
show, I think. He really is like a major fan. And yes, he keeps the stats. I have never looked at it. I'm going to take a wild guess that I hold the record for losses.
I don't know if you do, but I looked at your first place finishes, and you have been in first or tied for first something like a quarter of the times you've been on. So you're
wow,
pretty good.
That's very, you know, for many, many years, I never won. And my kids were little. I mean, Thomas, who's 18 now, was, he was 3 when I started. And on that show. And so he sort of grew up. I don't think he's ever listened to it. He might have listened to a couple minutes of it before, but he doesn't much care about it one way or the other. But he was very excited when he was little, when I would call home on after the show, and I would tell him, you know, how I did. And he was always like wanting to, you know, every time I would say, you know, well, Mom lost again. I had just shamed the family in his estimation. He'd be like, oh, Mom, very upset. For years this went on. I'd call, Mom didn't win. Oh, so finally one night I call home and I go, hey, guess what? Mom won tonight. And he was so excited. He's shouting into the phone and he shouts off the phone to his sisters. He goes, Mom won, Mom won. And then he gets back on the phone. He goes, what did you win? And I said, well, honey, you don't win anything. You just get to say you won. And he went, that's a ripoff. He thought that made me so much more stupid than all the times that I had lost. This to him was just poor judgment on my part. Why had I put myself out there in that way if there was no monetary reward?
What do you think makes that show work? We just had a fun drive. We wrapped it up in a week, and I can't tell you how many people list that show as their favorite.
Oh, wow. That's so nice to hear. You know, I don't know. It's one of the, you know, it's... I wouldn't put it up there with, you know, the 8 wonders of the world, but it is curious. I'm not exactly sure, and it would be good if we knew so that we never took out whatever the linchpin is, you know, that makes it work. I really don't know. I mean, Peter's great. They've had other people sometimes. I remember one time they did like a show not for broadcast. But they asked the panelists to stick around in the audience, the live audience, to stick around while they taped this episode that was, again, not for broadcast. It was to try out a guy to substitute for Peter when he wasn't going to be there. And, it was a guy that is occasionally a panelist, and so I don't want to say his name. But I will say that he came over to the panelists. At that point, he had just started even being a panelist. And he came over to the rest of us afterwards, and he went, oh, my God, that's hard. And we all determined that Peter Sagal has been making it look easy for a long time, but in truth, it really isn't. I, you know, not to overuse an overused expression, but I do think that dealing with the panel is a little bit like herding cats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know I am. I get a Peter glowers at me a lot.
I bet.
Yeah, he's responsible. He's responsible for keeping me in line, and I don't think that's always an easy job.
Our time is short, but I have to get a politics question in. Are you talking a lot about the race in your act these days?
You can't help it. And I feel complicit in a way because, well, maybe part of because I feel like part of the reason that this has sort of gone like a runaway buckboard, specifically, you know, Trump, but is that it's so hard to take your eyes off of. Because it's just so weird, you know. It's like watching a frog eat itself. It's not, it's not good. It's bad, but it's weird, and so it tends to be, you know, it's like a freakish spectacle that's very hard not to watch and very, very hard not to talk about. But I think that all of us, you know, certainly the news media is guilty of this, which is, it gets, because we're all interested in watching this very weird thing that's happening, it gets great ratings, and therefore, you know, the news media hasn't been able to turn away either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was flipping the television one day in a hotel room, and I came across, I guess it was CNN. I hold them responsible for a lot of the ills of the world. But, you know, so I just flipped, and the image that came on the screen was a... let's see, a long alley, a man at the end of the alley who was standing sort of half of his body was behind a building, and the other half was, you know, was, you could see. And I have, you know how you're flipping around, you just see something, and your brain kind of concludes what it is if it's something that you've seen before. And it says down at the bottom, you know, live broadcast, you know, breaking news happening now, whatever the hell it said. And so I think, and the guy looked very nefarious at the end of the alley. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, it's another horrible shooter incident. You know, somebody's barricaded in somewhere, something horrible. And I watch for a few minutes before I hear the announcer say, or the, you know, the news guy say, Donald Trump, we think, will be driving down this alley when he goes to his meeting. And as much as I hate CNN, I got to tell you, I flipped to three different channels and they had the exact same image on. So three different media outlets thought it was a good idea to film the alley that Donald Trump would likely drive down to go to a meeting. That's crazy. All right, having said all this, yes, I talk about him. I don't think we should, but yes, I do. You just can't help it. I mean, for me, when I first saw him, when he did the speech in Alabama about a year ago, August it was, the one where he told the Alabamans that he started to say his favorite book was The Art of the Deal, and he held it up to the crowd, and then he sort of remembered where he was, and he said, oh, my second favorite book is The Art of the Deal. And in this very sort of clumsy way, you know, like clearly that wasn't what he started to say. And then he says, you know what my first favorite is? And the crowd, to their credit, went like, no. And he says, the Bible. And he says, oh, yeah, the Bible and the Art of the Deal. That makes all the sense in the world. One just dovetails into the other, doesn't it? They're coming out in a box set now. The Bible apparently was just the prequel to the Art of the Deal.
Well, listen, Paula Poundstone is coming back to the Northeast. She'll be at the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie on June 24th. It's always a pleasure to have you on, whether it's one of these interviews or on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Paula. And good luck with Nucky. I hope it works out this time.
Oh, thanks very much. Take care.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.